A Hero's Journey is a podcast filled with spoilers. We recommend reading the book each week before you listen, but we trust you to make your own decision.
Hi, and welcome to A Hero's Journey, a literary podcast. I'm your host and judge, Jack, and I'm here with my transcendent Tashlins.
This is Alex.
And I'm Zach.
Each week, we look at a different book through Joseph Campbell's monomyth.
This week on A Hero's Journey, we're discussing The Last Battle, the seventh book in the Chronicles of Narnia series. This book, unlike most of the other books, starts in Narnia and follows King Tyrion in his struggles at the end of Narnia. He first comes across the ape shift and the donkey puzzle, who have masqueraded as Aslan and made an alliance with the followers of Tash in the country across the desert.
Read no subtle racism into that statement.
There's a lot of not subtle racism in that statement. Tyrion leads a group of Narnians to fight against this group now following Tash, and it brings about the end of the world, waking Father Time to blow his horn and end the race of Narnia. Jill and Eustace, our heroes from the Silver Chair, reappear and help Tyrion in this fight, and eventually all of our former heroes and kings and queens of Narnia from Earth are reunited are reunited with Tyrion, Jill, and Eustace in Aslan's country, where they go and discover that they are in heaven.
That is the gist of it. They are in heaven. Aslan takes a new shape, and it is more beautiful than they could ever expect. We begin our departure where all great not high kings of Narnia start their journeys, hearing of some deforestation with a solid environmentalism message mixed in with our Christian mythology here.
Yes, so our hero this week is King Tyrion, and the journey he's going on is to enter into Aslan's country. The call to adventure for King Tyrion is hearing that there are trees being chopped in the lantern waste, and really wondering, like, why is this happening? Why are people chopping down the trees, especially trees that are holding nymphs? And then our refusal of the call is when Tyrion hears that Aslan is ordering the chopping of the trees, and he has to consider, like, well, Aslan is God, essentially. So maybe this is right that the trees are being chopped down. For a meeting of the mentor, this is going a little past our crossing of the threshold, but I will come back to that. The meeting of the mentor is the group of animals that feed him and remind him of his duty to protect Narnia and his people. Our crossing the threshold is after Tyrion goes and realizes why the trees are being cut down. He attacks and kills one of the animals there. And he then crosses the threshold by surrendering himself to Shift, the ape who claims to be speaking for Aslan, but we as readers know is really speaking for himself and is a cruel ape. For our belly of the whale, finally, Jill and Eustace come into Narnia and free him from the tree that Tyrion has been tied to, awaiting death for going against the ape shift.
Man, whenever I was hear ape shift, even though I know what it is, I'm always like, there's a shape-shifting ape? Hey. Right, so for our journey, it seems a little deterministic, but we seem to be all right with that, so obviously there's nothing to be discussed, but
Narnia.
Yes, the problem I have is that, you know, there's nothing, what's inherently bad about the tree chopping?
They're killing nymphs, man.
God doesn't like it.
Weren't they dryads?
Or, yeah, probably dryads. Not water nymphs, but the forest equivalent dryads. You're right.
And, yeah, but, you know, they've been harvesting lumber here in Narnia for a while, so it's just, this is just a little more widespread than that, and a little, I think it's, if it had been, you know, Narnia is doing it of their own free will, who would have really cared? I was just very curious as to, you know, why it was such a big deal for him.
Well, there are different trees, right? There are the dryad trees and the regular trees, just like there are the talking animals and the regular animals. So I'm sure that no one chops down the dryad trees or normally. And then the lantern waste is an important place. It's where the Aslan first appeared and made the beasts into talking beasts. So maybe there's some reason that they can't chop down trees in that area.
Okay, I don't have a problem, I guess, with this being the Gold Avenger because it's what sets Tyrion out on the trip. But Tyrion doesn't spend a very long time believing this is in the name of Aslan, right? We obviously know that a lot of characters and like unnamed characters have fallen for this farce that the donkey puzzle is Aslan, but Tyrion never falls for this, right? They get out, they gather a small army, and they get to where they're going, and they find two of those, what are the Calamorans abusing one of the horses, and they immediately kill them.
Yeah,
like they don't spend really any time being like, maybe we should hear out the tree choppers. They get there, find something they don't like, and immediately kill two people.
That could have been the consequences of anything.
Yeah, but it's not a refusal. It's not this refusal he's stating. It's just, it's not like no, they go.
I agree with you, Zach. I'm just just being sarcastic.
Moving on to the meaning of the mentor, the problem I have with, right, these are the animals who are feeding him while he's tied up.
That is correct.
So what they really should have done was free him, right? But they don't want to go against Aslan. So they're doing literally the bare minimum of keeping him alive. But they aren't really helping him.
They're reminding him of his duty to his people.
Okay, what is his duty to his people, and how are they reminding him of it? They're feeding him.
His duty is to protect them.
Okay, how do they remind? Do they go, oh, save us from Aslan? No, because they think Aslan is there.
They call out, Aslan, 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 speak to us, comfort us, be angry with us no more.
Okay. They all think that Aslan is there and that this is like some sort of righteous downtrodding. So I just don't understand what you mean by it. What this duty is to protect his people, but all his people aren't looking to him to protect them. They're looking to him saying, man, it's a real shame he pissed off God, but we can't really help you. We're sorry that you're being hurt, but hey, none of this is a good situation. I just don't think they could really do anything. The man makes some
compelling points.
No, look, the animals say, we don't want any other king. We are your people. If only the ape and the Calormans who were against you, we would have fought till we were cut up into pieces. And then before we let them tie you up. They're saying we can't go against Aslan. So it's reminding him that he needs to be the speaker for Aslan.
His duty is towards Aslan, and that's Aslan over there. Why is he going against Aslan?
It's not Aslan.
Yeah, but he doesn't know that.
Yes, we do.
He doesn't know that. We do.
He also knows that. He doesn't
believe it's Aslan. Not until later. Not until, like, when they come and feed him and stuff. It's not until he's been like awaiting his judgment for a while that he recognizes like this whole thing is a big lie, and then
But that semantics aside, I'm not certain how that actually applies as mentorship.
That would be a good point. And I don't have a response to that one.
Were you hoping to drag us into such a semantic argument that you could declare victory and hope we didn't actually rule on the point?
Yeah, I hoped you wouldn't realize. I had been considering Jill and Eustace, but I think they come in too late. And I don't think that they actually do a lot of mentoring either. It's mostly, in fact, the other way. Tyrion helps them train with the bow and the sword and leads them into battle. They don't do a lot of mentoring for him.
Okay, so the crossing of the threshold, I don't really mind it coming before the mentor, but it seems like something that's, the danger he's put himself in is extremely voluntary, and it seems more like a belly of the whale than it does a crossing of the threshold, because he's like not really moving anywhere. He's already kind of in the same situation. He just gets like tied to the tree.
Well, he switches situation from being like a fugitive on the run to now being a fugitive captured. But I do see what you're saying about it being more of a belly of the whale, except for the journey to go to Aslan's country. I don't think it fits that. Whereas when Jill and Eustace come and they're reminding him of Aslan and freeing him to go fight for Aslan, that feels to me more like a belly in this journey. Yeah, I was also considering the killing to be the crossing of the threshold and then this being the belly of the whale, but the journey took a turn later and I had to switch things up, obviously.
I'm good with Jill and Eustace as our belly. I think we could even move the crossing earlier to the shift of, God, I can't use shift this episode, to the change in his world when he becomes a fugitive in the first place, so even before surrendering.
Okay, I think that, like I said, that was one of my other options, but
Yeah. And I think we can all agree on the belly.
Yeah, the belly's fine. I think the first reintroduction of, you know, Earth characters is is a good belly.
We're just going to close out on our departure, hitting those very solid call to adventure, crossing threshold, and belly of the whale. But these later Narnia books, man, they break structure. We don't have old Narnia friends mentoring new Narnia friends. Yeah, this makes me sad. Narnia is only 4 out of 5 on the departure. Heartbreaker.
You mean 3 out of 5?
No, Narnia is normally 4 out of 5. People don't normally really refuse the call in Narnia very.
Yeah, okay, sorry. Normally, I thought you meant this time.
And I mean, why would you turn Edgar into Narnia? Portaling right on in to our initiation. Although we do come to our road of trials, it's just the best part of the book because this is where High King Peter shows up, folks.
Yes, and he is coming.
We get to make High King Peter jokes one more time.
Yes, and High King Peter is coming soon, but first our trials. The first trial for King Tyrion here is to go to the tower outpost that he has and start training with Jill and Eustace. And here he gains valuable allies and is able to kind of regroup and think about what his next steps are going to be. Our second road of trials is freeing Jewel and Puzzle, Jewel being the unicorn, the best friend of King Tyrion and his steadfast companion on many previous journeys that we are only hinted at, but freeing these shows Tyrion that he was correct in assuming that Aslan had not ordered all of the things that are happening. And he also, of course, saves his best friend. And then our last trial is the fight at Saddle Hill, where Tyrion gets to make a stand and show that he is fighting for Aslan against the evils of Tash. For a meeting with the higher power, these are the 7 kings and queens of Narnia, our Earth friends who are back, but it's mostly High King Peter who is able to tell Tash to go away and save Tyrion from facing down the devil that is Tash. For our temptress, I actually had a hard time finding this. So when we come to this point, I'm going to ask Zach and Jack if they had anything. But for right now, I was lacking one. For our Tome with the Creator, this is, of course, Aslan appearing to Tyrion and saying that he did well and that he is the last king and he did what he was supposed to do. For the apotheosis, this is when they're looking through the doorway into Narnia, realizing that Aslan has been calling the stars home and that the world is ending, that Narnia is to be no more. And for our ultimate boon, this is realizing that they're in Aslan's country and celebrating in the beauty and wonder that is Aslan's country.
So for the Road of Trials, I think that the going to the tower is fine. They do some sort of character development there. But the problem is that the freeing of Jewel and Puzzle, that happens at the same time that Tyrion is rescued, right? Like the Eugene and Eustace and Jill show up, they free Tyrion and rescue Jewel and do and save Puzzle all in the same sort of jailbreak.
No, it's not the same. There's a separation there. They flee to the tower, just Tyrion, Jill, and Eustace, and then the next day they go back to retrieve Jewel and Puzzle. And that happens, I'm fairly certain, after the eagle comes to inform King Tyrion that his centaur, battle leader, was killed before actually getting to Carr Paravel and ordering the army.
Okay. If that's the case, then I don't necessarily have a problem with it because it's proving instrumental. The problem with the fight at the hill and where the stable is that it's also really like the ultimate boon, sort of. Like it's the big culmination moment. It's not really a trial as much as it is this whole fight is what we've all kind of been building up to, right?
Yes and no. I think that the trial here is to stand up against overwhelming odds and fight for Aslan, showing proof to Aslan that he is, fighting for him, that he is doing the right thing, and that he is worthy of Aslan. Whereas he could have just sat down and fell into despair that the Calormans were going to be taking over.
Yeah, he is kind of like going down swinging, but it seems more like out of an act of desperation. Like he's really the only one left at the end of that scene where he drags Rishta into the stable, right? Everyone else has been sort of killed off.
Yeah.
It's really like a desperate last stand and not really like you accomplished too much. Like seems like everybody he cares about is at this point in time in his own head dead until they get into Aslan's country.
Yeah, but it's like I said, it's the showing that he's not going to back down, that he's willing to fight for Aslan. That's part of the trial, even though everybody dies. That was Aslan's plan, right? Everybody had to die to get into Aslan's country so Narnia could end. I don't understand why the fact that it's a desperate last stand negates it as a trial.
Because he fails the trial that he thinks he's accomplishing and succeeds in the trial that you framed it, right? But it's in his own contemporary mindset, he's essentially failed.
I don't think he did. He was going into this battle knowing that he was going to lose. The trial is fighting anyway. It's not winning the battle. The trial is actually doing the fight, going in and fighting.
I'm going to side with Alex, but it's not as cut and dry as I'd normally like for a Narnia book. They're normally pretty good on this step.
Okay, we'll move on then. The higher power being the previous kings and queens of Narnia. Fine. All hail, High King Peter. As far as the Temptress, Alex, I guess there could have been some sort of temptation to not do the things that he's done, you know, fight this desperate last stand, but he seems pretty gung-ho about it, so.
It's not even like a moment where he's, right, like, where he has the option to submit to Tash and spare his life or anything, and he stands up for what he believes. He's just pretty on it the whole time.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, you would think Tash would be the temptress because he's the representation of the devil. The devil tempts people, but I agree with you. There's not really a moment where Tyrion goes,
this Tash guy, good he's all Tash. About.
Yeah.
Okay, well, talking about the Atonement, the creator, really, there's no problems. You know, the actual appearance of Aslan, it has the creator and saying, hey, it's okay that you killed all these people. Atonement and with the creator, fine. The apotheosis, though, it seems like a more almost of an apotheosis for us, the readers, and less for like the characters. It just it's almost like an expose, it feels like to me in the book, right? We watch this sort of grand unmaking of Narnia as prompted by Aslan with Father Time. But I don't know where Father Christmas is, by the way. I feel like that was a grand oversight. It just doesn't seem very Tyrion specific. It seems reader focused.
No, it's not specific to Tyrion. I think Jill and Eustace both realize it because they were the ones who originally saw Father Time. All of the old Earth people, Lucy, I think specifically mentioned, realize that Narnia is coming to an end, but I think it is still the apotheosis for Tyrion as well as everyone else. Like, I don't think he was expecting Narnia to end when he died and the last stand happened, that battle on Saddle Hill happened.
Yeah, but that's not a realization. That's just that they have no...
I believe we did this last time and accepted that an apotheosis is just something that you can be told annoyingly.
I think this one is even like less of them being told, where they realize the world is ending. And like Jack said, they ask Aslan to not do it. So they had to realize that it was happening. And then Aslan tells them, obviously, no, this is what the plan is. It's done. But they do realize it.
Yeah, the biggest apotheosis is that they're all dead and that Aslan is Jesus. But those are for everyone else, not Tyrion, whose name I always read as Trinian.
Yeah, I actually had to double check after we started saying Tyrion. It's like, is that right? It is, though. I spelled it correctly.
Nice.
All right, and then, of course, I have no problem with the Ultimate Boon. So you get to... It does read, I remember you, even as a child, first reading this, 10, 12 years old, thinking, wait, did everybody just die? Like, everyone's dead now? And thinking that was really weird.
That was going to close us out on the initiation with just that temptation missing. And if you think that you have one, I know that we posited our theory of what the temptation could have been, wasn't here. Is there a temptation you can think of, or perhaps a temptation you would think better fitting for the last battle of Narnia? Feel free to reach out to us on our Discord or at Twitter at @a_heroes_journey. Finally, not having to return home, we come to our final return to Narnia.
And for our refusal to return, this is when Tyrion and our other heroes come across Emeth, one of the Kalor men who is in Aslan's country, and thinking that they will have to fight him, that not realizing that this is the perfect place and that there is no more reason to fight, no more fighting to be done.
What about like for fun? Because Peter has this sword.
What about Valhalla?
Yeah, fighting for fun is different than the fighting that they were going to be doing. You're correct. For our magical flight, this is going up and in, going further into Aslan's country, as he is told. And it is a little magical, as in they can travel faster than normal. They can keep up with a unicorn or an eagle when they want to. Our rescue from without is our eagle Farsight and our unicorn Jewel calling to him and telling him to go up further up and in. And, you know, him realizing that he has this magical ability that I just mentioned. For our crossing the return threshold, this is going through the gate at the end into the final bit of Aslan's country. For our Master of Two Worlds, Tyrion was the last king of Narnia and did well there. And now he is in Aslan's country and in all of that glory.
Glory be to Aslan.
And then for our final freedom to live, there's a quote from the end of the book here. Now, at last, they were beginning chapter one of the great story, which no one on earth has read, which goes on forever, in which every chapter is better than the one before. So our author here, dear C.S. Lewis, is telling us that this freedom to live is better than any freedom to live ever, which I'm sure we all expected, as now King Tyrion is in Aslan's country, aka heaven.
Which means he is dead, correct?
Yes.
And Alex, you are a doctor, so I want to make sure I get this correct. Being dead, the synonym for that would be being not alive, correct?
Yes, King Tyrion has in fact entered the afterlife and has the freedom to live forever in this afterlife.
Freedom to be dead in the afterlife.
You know that is not correct here.
For your refusal to return, I thought you were going to have a hard time with this, but this is fine. You know, the naivety, I think it's interesting how Aslan kind of comes in and says, no, he's good. No, it's fine. But he does. The magical flight up and in.
Which, just remember, folks, is C.S. Lewis saying that he approves of Satanists?
No, he's just saying if you do the right thing, then it doesn't matter who you're actually. I think this is his sort of like catch-all at the end of the book, but saying like, hey, if somebody does something right, but they don't actually know about Jesus, and they still get to come in. It was his little catch-all.
Yeah, it's only if you're told about Jesus and then don't obey him. You don't
get that's actually a Catholic teaching. Just
I know, that's why they have missionaries. And it's the classic one of, so wait, you're telling me if you hadn't come here and told me about Jesus, I'd still go to heaven? Yes. Then why did you come here to tell me about him?
Yeah.
All right, so the going up and in, his ability to keep up with stuff, that's just a thing that kind of everybody gets, and they're already essentially in Aslan's country, so I don't really like this whole, especially don't like
what the are rescue. They being magical flighted from, and what are they being
there's no danger here, they're already like perfectly safe,
they are magical flighting from Narnia, the world that is ended, into Aslan's country, and they're being rescued from the same, the Narnia that is ended.
Yeah, but there's no way that if he just sits there, Aslan's gonna be like, man, you should have, why didn't you take off and fly? Now you don't get to come.
Okay, that is a magical flight moving between worlds, but right, like, is one rescued from Judgment Day when God sorts left and right columns?
Yes, I think.
I guess technically they do call it saved.
Yeah, Aslan had to give himself up and die on the stone table for anyone to be saved. And now the final judgment, he's deciding who is being saved and not.
So the rescue from without is Aslan again.
Yeah, but the but Tyrion is being led in by the Saints, Farsight, and Jewel. I really need to figure out if CS is just Christian or Catholic.
Quick to Wikipedia. Definitely didn't have.
No, he was a member of the Church of England.
Okay.
Committed Anglican.
Well, in that case, probably not led by saints.
There you go. I'll give you magic flight. I don't view it as a rescue in the way that we've defined rescue everywhere else.
All right, that's fine.
The crossing the return threshold, he was never in this place.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure that none of them have been to this place before.
No, some of them have been to Aslan's country very briefly.
Oh, that's true. There was no, they got to see it, like over the hill, right?
Yeah.
They didn't get to be there.
I mean, look at Tyrion's it. Not been there before.
Yeah.
But he's returning to his new eternal normal. It's a metaphorical return.
I don't know. There's so much metaphor.
So you can decide the turn threshold. I don't beside the fact that he's not been there, I mean, he's going to be there forever, so.
Yeah, no, it's boring, but it fits.
He's not a master. He got helped pretty much the entire book. Aslan's like, hey, you did a good job. You did the part you were supposed to do, and he fit himself into the puzzle, but he wasn't, like, he failed a lot, both.
He did not fit himself into puzzle.
That would have been a reason not to get in Aslan's country. But no, he failed a lot throughout the story, and you know, maybe that's a defining characteristic that even in his failings he was still seen as good by God or whatever, but I don't think he exhibited too much mastery in the story.
Also, it's how can he be a king in Aslan's country? High King Peter is there.
And why do there need to be kings in Aslan's country? Everyone probably equal.
Yeah.
Everyone has their own mansion.
Communism in heaven.
And he has no freedom to live because he's just going to live.
He's dead, so there's no freedom to live. But Alex still gets the point anyway because the author directly tells us that the freedom to live is there.
But he's definitely not the master of two worlds.
Alex, unless you've got a strong rebuttal, I don't think we have any proof for the second world outside of its heaven that he's master of anything.
Similar to our temptress, I did not originally have a master of two worlds, but I decided to say one when I got to that point there. So
good.
I don't.
And that is going to close us out on our return. Rescue from without, master of two worlds missing. Not so surprising on one part of that. And I guess it's, again, hard to be rescued when it's being in heaven. You don't need rescuing from that. It's going to leave us with a final score of 12 out of 17. Low for a Narnia book, but we'll still put Tyrion on our list of heroes. And, you know, I think that's fitting. He's kind of one of the weaker kings of Narnia, seen over the death throes. Moving on into closing thoughts. I don't have any help. We've talked about Narnia so much lately. It's the one problem with doing the same series repeatedly.
We've only done two Narnia books in a row.
Didn't we also just do The Horses Boy when we first got back, though?
No, not when we first got back. That was like our last one before this.
Okay. Hey. It's Narnia. It's fun. I enjoyed when I did my reread of these. I am not as big a super fan as some members of this podcast. I have always liked Narnia, though. Who doesn't? I gotta say, the last battle is normally pretty low on my list in Narnia. I tend to be a pretty big fan of the core three books with
Pevenses.
Thank you. I was going to say Parvel, but that's the castle. With the Pevenses. And I found I was more fond of Eustace on these rereads, and having him and Jill come in this book is a lot of fun. But Tyrion kind of gets a bit of a short stick. We get one little book with him, and I'm here for it being the last Narnia book. I'm not here for good King Tyrion.
Yeah, I like Jack. This is not my favorite of the Narnia books, but I do still enjoy it. I think that in this one of the different things is it focuses on a Narnian. This is our, I guess, first book since The Horse and the Boy. So just those two that really focus on a Narnian only and don't really have our Earth heroes introduced. And it's different. This one, especially, the Earth heroes are barely mentioned, and they don't have a lot of impact on the story until the end when they're all entering into Aslan's country. And for me, this, again, kind of like the Magician's Nephew, the allegory becomes less and less obscured. It's more in the forefront that this is a Christian story, which is not necessarily a bad thing. That's what Lewis was going for. And it does tell that Christian story very well, in my opinion. I do think that this has a lot more of the not so subtle racism points that people always seem to point out in The Horse and His Boy. I think that this is a bigger offender than The Horse and His Boy for the portrayal of the Calorman. But all in all, you know, Narnia is always a series that I'm going to love. So I got to try and look past some of the faults there or acknowledge them, but move on.
Yeah, I enjoy Narnia. As I mentioned, and it may have been cut previously, but even reading the ending of the story didn't leave me with as much as a what just happened sort of vibe as when I read His Dark Materials at about the same age. But it certainly leaves you with a sort of what just happened sort of vibes, which, you know, maybe that's a good thing for children finishing a book series that probably took up a large portion of their time and energy. It certainly is a fitting end for the story that the author wanted to tell, which I think is the most important part. At no point do you go, oh, well, what happened just doesn't make sense. It just is a bit odd. So, and so I'm just glad that we got to finish the journey here together on the podcast as well.
Aww. Thank you so much for joining us. If you enjoy Hero's Journey as much as we love doing it, don't forget to leave us a review where we get your podcast from. And if that place happens to be Spotify, don't forget that we put up our weekly polls there. We love to hear from you guys, and we love getting your answers. As always, I have been your host and judge, Jack.
This is Alex.
And I'm Zach.
And join us next week when we will be diving into the Lord of Chaos and getting back to the Wheel of Time.
Yay! Oh, thank you.
What's the allegory? Is he supposed to be like...
He's Saint Peter, apparently.
Okay. That was going to be my guess, but...
That's not a lot of allegory there. It's the same name.
Remind me what the journey is.
Be a good king of Narnia, except, you know...
That's not the journey.
To win God's approval.
That's not the journey.
This kind of is. Alex put his ultimate boon as being in Aslan's country.
I put it in there.